And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon reports its second case of the new coronavirus strain first discovered in the UK. Two people are injured in Tacoma, Washington, after a police car drives through a crowd of pedestrians, and President Biden has reversed the ban on transgender people serving in the military. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 25th, 2021. I'm Althea Billings. The Oregon Health Authority reported 435 new cases of COVID-19 on Monday, bringing the total number of cases in the state up to 138,587. The number of cases reported Monday is the lowest single-day total in Oregon since October 28th. Oregon health officials also reported two new deaths, raising the state's death toll to 1,882. Multnomah County had the highest number of new cases with 105, followed by Washington County with 50, Marion County with 48 cases, and Clackamas County with 46. There are currently 320 people hospitalized statewide, including 75 people in intensive care units. Oregon reported its second case of the new coronavirus strain that was discovered in the UK and is thought by medical experts to be more contagious. A person in Yamhill County with no known travel history has tested positive for the COVID-19 variant. Some reports suggest the variant might be more deadly compared to other coronavirus strains. It is believed that available vaccines will provide immunity against the variant. Oregon Health and Science University is teaming up with Portland International Airport and the American Red Cross to set up a drive-through vaccination site in the airport parking lot. Those being vaccinated Sunday were part of Phase 1A, which includes healthcare workers, residents of long-term care facilities, and other outpatient public health and necessary services personnel. All eligible people were invited by OHSU. The health authority reported that as of Sunday, about 308,000 doses of the vaccine have already been administered across Oregon. Nationally, the U.S. has reported more than 25.2 million cases of COVID-19. At least 420,000 people have died across the country. Over the past week, there has been an average of about 170 cases per day, a decrease of 33% from the average 2 weeks earlier. More than 15 million people in the United States have received at least one dose of a COVID vaccine. Globally, the coronavirus pandemic has sickened more than 99.5 million people in nearly every country. At least 2.1 million people have died across the world. A class action lawsuit is calling for immediate vaccination of all inmates in Oregon. Since the beginning of the pandemic, 38 inmates have died after testing positive for COVID-19, and more than 3,200 inmates across Oregon's prison system have contracted the virus. That means 1 in 4 people incarcerated in the state have contracted coronavirus. Oregon Justice Resource Center, a nonprofit that addresses issues involving mass incarceration, filed a class action lawsuit calling for the immediate vaccination of all inmates. The lawsuit is filed against Governor Kate Brown and leaders at the Oregon Department of Corrections. Juan Chavez is an attorney with the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Chavez said, quote, "We have an obligation to protect them now. That's the bargain we've decided. If you don't want to incarcerate people, don't incarcerate people. But now that we have, we need to protect them." According to the Department of Corrections, more than 1,300 inmates who are older and more vulnerable have already been vaccinated. However, Chavez says that's not good enough. He says the other 90% of the prison population needs the vaccine now, or more inmates could die. The class action lawsuit calls for the immediate vaccination of all inmates across Oregon. Protesters gathered in Tacoma, Washington on Sunday night after a video went viral of local police running over pedestrians the prior night. Tacoma police were responding to 911 calls related to street racing at the time. In the video, a police SUV is surrounded by passersby and pedestrians. The police car had its lights on and is seen backing up before taking up speed and charging through a crowd of pedestrians. Video footage shows several people thrown to the ground and at least one person caught under the wheels. Two people have been hospitalized for their injuries. The vehicular violence is under investigation by Pierce County as a deadly force incident, and the offending officer has been placed on paid administrative leave. Tacoma police released a statement on the matter, which alluded to the officer in the car to be a victim. They said he was surrounded by passersby who were banging on his windows and that he had no other way out. Investigators declined to say whether the officer radioed for help related to the crowd surrounding his car. This is not the first time Tacoma police have been under investigation for their use of force. There is an ongoing investigation into five Tacoma PD officers involved in the murder of Manuel Ellis, a 33-year-old black man who was asphyxiated to death by police while in custody 9 months ago. Two different investigations into the incident from different law enforcement jurisdictions fell apart due to conflicts of interest. The five officers remain on paid leave. In-home care providers in Washington state are concerned about potential cuts to the state's long-term care services because of the pandemic. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story with the Public News Service.
Home care providers for older Washingtonians and people with disabilities are pushing back on potential cuts to the state's long-term care services. The Department of Health and Human Services has been asked to consider cuts since the pandemic has shot a hole in the state budget. It could mean a $1.1 billion reduction in long-term care services for the 2021 through 2023 budget. Miranda Bridges is a member of SEIU 775 who cares for her mother. She says lawmakers should consider how many people access these services.
It may come in time for them or maybe for somebody else that they care about that they're going to need somebody to be there for their loved ones. But if they keep cutting and keep taking away the hours from the home care workers, it's going to be really tough.
State lawmakers are looking at a $3.3 billion budget shortfall through 2023, according to a forecast from last year. Bridges says her mother might not want her to help if Bridges wasn't supported for it financially, which also would mean her mother missing out on some things she enjoys doing.
Being able to get up and know that you can have your meal and be able to go in town and be able to do those things that you want to do, but not having that support, not having somebody to be there to provide that assistance for you, can kind of make you feel like just less of a person.
With the pandemic still affecting the economy, Bridges also says losing this income could make things more precarious for her.
If they would take away what I'm getting, it would really put me in a bad situation where it could come to the point that I wouldn't be able to pay for my mortgage or for my house, and so then that could result in me being kicked out.
SEIU 775 says cuts could put 10,000 in-home caregivers' jobs at risk, and another 10,000 older people and people with disabilities could be removed from home care services. This is the first installment of a four-part series funded in part by SEIU Local 775. The second installment will run on February 1st and examines at-home care workers' contract with Washington State. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Many rural Washington state kids are going hungry during the pandemic and can be hard to reach, especially while schools are closed. We go again to Eric Tegedoff with the Public News Service.
Hunger is on the rise across the country because of the pandemic, and it can be especially hard to get food to children living in rural areas. In Washington state, hunger is up at least 5% in every county. The nonprofit Save the Children has helped distribute 600,000 meals to kids in rural parts of the state. Amy Barlay, the group's deputy director of programs in Washington, says Save the Children also helped the Lake Quinault School District, a large district on the Olympic Peninsula, purchase a van and truck to get to hard-to-reach families.
They have families that live down logging roads, and they're able to deliver food directly to those families' doorsteps. Those families probably otherwise would not be able to receive the meals. They might not be able to get to the school.
Barlay says transportation is a barrier for many families. Save the Children has provided $250,000 to nutrition programs in the state, assisting its partners and school districts. Tamara Sandberg is Save the Children's U.S. Advisor for Food Security and Nutrition. She says widespread school closures have affected many children, but largely the 30 million who rely on free or reduced price meals. She adds that hunger due to COVID-19 is worse and more pervasive in rural America.
We're very concerned. This is a generation that is missing out on the nourishment that they need to grow and thrive. Kids cannot be hungry for knowledge when they're hungry for food.
Sandberg says one of the most promising models for delivering meals is the Farmers to Families Food Box program, in which the USDA pays for food that is distributed directly to people. Save the Children has distributed about 200,000 boxes through this program. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
An executive order signed by President Biden on Friday is expected to bring extra food aid to people across the country. Andrea Sears brings us this story from New York.
Many New Yorkers receiving SNAP and pandemic EBT will be getting increases in their benefits. An estimated 29 million adults and at least 8 million children nationwide are experiencing food insecurity because of the pandemic. On Friday, President Joe Biden signed an executive order directing the Agriculture Department to allow states to increase SNAP benefits to the lowest income recipients and to raise emergency benefits for families whose children would normally be getting free meals at school by 15%. Joel Berg, CEO of Hunger Free America, says that should benefit at least 3 million New Yorkers.
This is the boldest, biggest administrative step to fight hunger that any administration has taken, really in the modern era, at least since the Great Society program.
The White House says a 15% increase in pandemic EBT benefits could give a family of three about $105 more to buy food over 2 months. The order could mean a 15 to 20% increase in SNAP benefits to about 12 million of the lowest income recipients. Berg predicts the overall impact of the increased benefits will be huge.
This is going to benefit tens of millions of American families and be billions of dollars extra food and maybe even tens of billions of dollars of extra food when this all works out.
The president is also asking Congress for a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package that includes other kinds of direct aid for people who have lost jobs in the pandemic. But a large relief bill will take time to negotiate and get through both the U.S. House and Senate. Berg points out that Friday's executive order was signed in the first 48 hours of the new administration.
I think in some cases people will be getting this massive bump in food over just a course of a few weeks. So this proves that government properly managed can not only act big, but can act quickly.
He adds expanding access to food will decrease malnutrition and strengthen people's immune systems with the benefit of reducing both COVID-19 infection rates and deaths. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
President Joe Biden has reversed the Trump-era ban on transgender people serving in the U.S. military. Biden signed an executive order on Monday repealing the ban that Trump announced in July of 2017. The order was signed in the Oval Office as Biden met with new Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, Chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, and Vice President Kamala Harris. In a statement, the White House said the order, quote, sets the policy that all Americans who are qualified to serve in the armed forces of the United States should be able to serve. The executive order will bar service members from being discharged or denied reenlistment due to their gender identity. The order also directs the Department of Defense to correct the military records of anyone who had been affected by the previous ban. Biden is also asking for a progress report from both departments within 60 days. A 2016 Department of Defense survey estimated that 1% or almost 9,000 active duty service troops were transgender. Alfonso David is the president of the Human Rights Campaign. David said, quote, "For years, transgender patriots were forced to continue to hide their identity while serving in our military. But today, they may serve openly as themselves. The greatest military in the world will again value readiness over bias and qualifications over discrimination." You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio, exploring the dangers of post-fire logging in Oregon State. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 36 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 41. Today in history, in 1924, the first Winter Olympics begin in Chamonix, France. Norway won the unofficial team competition with 17 medals, followed by Finland with 11 and the U.S. with 4. Of the nearly 300 athletes, only 13 were women, and they all competed in figure skating events. The quote of the day is from gymnast and five-time Olympic medalist Simone Biles, who said, quote, "I'd rather regret the risks that didn't work out than the chances I didn't take at all." GOP debates the constitutionality of impeaching a former president. Concerns emerge over a new domestic terrorism bill, and the White House looks to both sides of the aisle to pass new COVID relief. With more on the story, it's 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we track the transition in uncharted territory.
What is being alleged and what we saw, which is incitement to insurrection, is an impeachable offense. If not, what is?
The House article of impeachment hits the Senate today, starting a two-week clock until former President Donald Trump's trial. Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah told CNN's State of the Union on Sunday that trying an ex-president is constitutionally sound and needed to achieve truth and justice. Not so, says his GOP colleague, South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds, on NBC's Meet the Press.
Article 1, sections, I think it's 3 or 6 and 7, specifically point out that you can impeach the president, and it does not indicate that you can impeach someone who is not in office. So I think it's a moot point.
In fact, the United States has never faced this situation before, and the question is legally unsettled. Thousands of National Guard troops may remain in D.C. through mid-March. Politico reports the Pentagon is concerned about mass demonstrations during Trump's impeachment trial. More intrigue over Trump at the Justice Department, according to the Wall Street Journal. When acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen would not go to the Supreme Court to contest election results, Trump planned to replace him with another justice official, Jeffrey Clark, who was said to be willing to pursue the legal challenge. Clark was introduced to Trump by Pennsylvania Congressman Republican Scott Perry. To show allegiance to Trump, Arizona's Republican Party publicly censured three members who supported the 2020 election process. Governor Doug Ducey, Senator Jeff Flake, and Cindy McCain, a major GOP donor and widow of staunch Republican Senator John McCain. On Friday, President Joe Biden asked intelligence agencies for a comprehensive threat assessment of domestic terrorism in the aftermath of the Capitol insurrection. The bipartisan Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act of 2021 was introduced in the House last week. It would strengthen resources to fight the threat of homegrown terrorism. But Alicia Sperry, justice reporter at The Intercept, says that agencies have failed to use more than 50 existing terrorism statutes to investigate and prosecute white supremacist violence. She contends that accountability is lost under broad umbrella extremism policies.
Are you targeting Black Lives Matter protesters? Are you targeting people of color? Are you targeting police critics? Or are you targeting white supremacists? We have no way of knowing.
130 civil and human rights groups oppose the law. Iman Bukudum is with the leadership conference.
We already have, we would argue, too many authorities that overcriminalize people in this country, particularly communities of color, Black, Brown, Muslim, Arab, South Asian, and other protesters.
White House economic advisors had a call yesterday with a bipartisan group of senators to drum up support for the $1.9 trillion COVID relief package. White House Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told reporters that struggling Americans need help now.
We can't wait. Just because Washington has been gridlocked before doesn't mean it needs to continue to be gridlocked.
Meanwhile, Senate votes are expected soon on Janet Yellen for Treasury Secretary, Pete Buttigieg for Transportation Secretary, and Alejandro Mayorkas to head the Department of Homeland Security. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
An Oglala Lakota leader says the new presidential administration is a welcome relief, and indigenous groups and allies can call on President Biden to stop the Line 3 project. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe in South Dakota says President Joe Biden taking office is a welcome relief. Kevin Killer says Biden kept his word on day one by canceling the Keystone XL pipeline permit. Lee Strubinger has more.
President Killer says tribal communities have been working for years to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. Killer says as a state legislator, he brought bills against the project that ultimately failed.
But, you know, to see that action, especially day one at the federal level, is a strong statement to, you know, who he's going to be as the president, you know, hoping to listen to our communities. And I think there's various tribal nations around the country stepped up and helped turn out the vote for him. So I think he's going to help repay that.
Killer says Biden's pick for Interior Secretary, Congresswoman Deb Haaland, will help lead to better conversations between the federal government and tribal governments. He says her strong background in Native issues will help her guide the Department of Interior. Killer is a former state senator from the district that covers the Pine Ridge Reservation. He's visiting the South Dakota State Capitol to pay respects to two former Oglala Lakota state lawmakers, Jim Bradford and Teresa Tubles, who passed away in 2020.
So just being here as a former legislator and as a current tribal president, there's very few people who actually held that, and Senator Tubbles is one of them. Senator Bradford was an amazing advocate for our communities, especially around schools, all this kind of stuff. But he was just a strong voice for us. You know, he always stood up when we needed to be there, and he was, he's just good at just making sure that our voices were heard. So that's why I'm really here to honor their legacies and, also sit with the other Native legislators and kind of visit with them a little bit.
Killer is also urging state lawmakers to pass a community school program bill that sets up 4 schools in South Dakota tailored to Native children. Courses will get taught in Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota, and will center around an Ocheti Shakoni curriculum. It's a bill that passed the state Senate last year, but failed in a House committee. State senators will continue their hearing on the bill on Tuesday. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strupinger in Pierre.
Indigenous people and their allies are calling on President Biden to stop the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline replacement project. A group of people met in Bacchus, Minnesota Saturday and marched down streets in opposition of the pipeline, just days after Biden took action to revoke the Keystone XL permit. Organizers say more than 200 water protectors took part in the march. The Indigenous Environmental Network streamed the demonstration live on Facebook.
Can't drink oil!
Keep it in the soil!
Construction began on Line 3 in early December. Indigenous people have been opposing the project at construction sites in northern Minnesota. A resistance camp was recently set up near Cloquet to try and slow construction. While supporters of the oil pipeline say the replacement is needed and the project creates jobs and boosts the economy. The Lakota Ray Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians in Wisconsin is observing Treaty Day. Virtual events are taking place Monday in celebration, including a powwow for students. The tribal college is hosting a series of speakers this week. In 1983, a court affirmed Ojibwe hunting, fishing, and gathering rights. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is reopening its COVID-19 emergency assistance program Monday to help Cherokee citizens financially. The tribe has already helped more than 4,000 people with emergency funds since September and has added $7 million more to the relief program. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A century-old Michigan home produces more energy than it uses, showing that even an old building can help slow global warming. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2006, Matt Grokoff bought a century-old house in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It had a south-facing roof, big windows, and heart pine floors.
It was our dream house.
But it lacked insulation. The windows leaked, and a 50-year-old furnace chugged away all winter long.
We had to put buckwheat pillows heated up in the microwave and stuff down at the bottom of the bed to stay warm at night. And then we would get the utility bill, and it was like $350 a month.
Grokoff was determined to reduce energy waste and cut carbon pollution. He installed a geothermal heating and cooling system and rooftop solar panels, and he replaced appliances, added insulation, and installed storm windows, all while preserving the home's original character and meeting historic preservation standards. In 2015, the International Living Future Institute certified Grokoff's home as net zero energy, meaning it produces as much energy as it uses. It's the oldest house in the country to earn that certification.
And we're looking forward to giving up that crown.
Because he says to limit climate change, it's necessary to cut carbon pollution from all homes, including the ones that have been around for generations. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro could face charges in the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity related to his involvement in the deforestation of the Amazon rainforest. Indigenous leaders in Brazil and human rights activists have brought the claims against him on a charge of ecocide. Ecocide means causing serious and lasting harm to the environment and to people. The crimes include the murder, forced transfer, and persecution of indigenous people in Brazil, as well as Amazon rainforest deforestation. Since Bolsonaro took office, deforestation in Brazil has increased by a massive 50%. Invasion of indigenous territories has increased over 130%, while fines and investigations into environmental crimes have been sharply reduced. Scientists have warned that Bolsonaro's destructive policies related to the world's largest rainforest could turn the Amazon into a savanna, making recovery from climate change next to impossible. Proceedings by the court are in their early stages, but activists find the steps being taken to be encouraging. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, January 25th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Laura Rossbrow-Tellum, Andrea Sears, Eric Tegadoff, and Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, Alternative Radio features lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Stage and Studio. Host Dime Roberts welcomes local Laotian American theater artist Samson Siharath. Then at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Aurora Josephson interviews painter Bradley Rogers. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.